Hello, everybody. I'm Roman Paszka. Welcome to a new podcast interview for New Books in East Asian Studies, which is part of the New Books network. My interlocutor today is Justina Kasha, who is actually the author of Hermeneutics of Evil in the Works of Endo Shusaku, Between Reading and Writing, a book that was published in 2016. Hello, Justina.
Hello.
Welcome to New Books in East Asian Studies podcast. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Let me start with a question about yourself. How did you become involved, interested in Japanese studies?
It's a very long story, actually, because if I were to say honestly and say everything, how I became interested in Japanese studies, I would have to go back to my childhood, which means that I lived in Japan as a child. So it was my almost obvious path later to choose Japanese studies as my profession. So I did my MA studies in back in Poland at the university, at Adam Mickiewicz University in Poznań. Then I did my PhD at University of Leeds in the United Kingdom. And currently I'm affiliated with Department of Japanese Studies at Nicholas Copernicus University, which is located in Torun in Poland. So there's definitely this element of personal or something that is linked to my childhood, that I used to live in Japan and Japanese was my first language. But when it comes to this particular project, as we spoke before, it was again quite a long journey to become interested in Endo Shusaku, and especially his essays, which were the main source of my inspiration, and also the analysis of for my PhD and then for my book. Of course, I had read Endo Shusaku's novels during my master degrees at the university back in Poland, because most of his novels have been translated into major languages, so they were also available in Polish. But when I was thinking about what sort of text shall I choose to analyze Endo Shusaku and to discuss in my PhD, I realized that actually there's a huge body of work which had never been explored properly. And even in Japan, they have been treated a little bit as the background for the novels. But let me go back to your question, why Endo Shusaku? Well, I have always been interested in this cross-cultural aspects of within Japanese studies. My MA thesis was actually about Japanese classical theater, where I already did also some parts about the influence of Japanese no theater into contemporary Western theater. So starting from Paul Claudel to Peter Brooks, for example. So this comparative perspective and this cross-cultural aspect was something that has been very, very important in my approach within Japanese studies. And for the sake of my MA dissertation, I also did some translations of texts written in Japanese about the actor training and how it also formed the vision of theater in a Western, 20th century Western theater. So again, when I came, started thinking seriously about my PhD, of course, Endo Shusaku was a perfect choice because of this constantly he's as a writer being torn between two worlds. One is the world of his indigenous, his country as Japan, and of course the West that embodied for him this adopted faith, which was Christianity. But at the same time, I realized that these works which analyze the problem of how to reconcile his adopted faith, especially treating him as a Japanese Christian writer. This most of this work has already been done when it comes to research. So I wanted to do something different, and that's why I turned into to his essays and critical works treating novels a little bit in the background. So that's how I came into this project at the start of my PhD. So I started with the translation of selected essays. From the very beginning, one of the first essays, 1947, when one of the first essays Endo wrote, until these, of course, I have only five essays. Endo wrote a huge amount of text, critical works, and there's also the problem how to define them, how to classify them. I don't know if it answers your question, but yes, it was a very long, long story.
We have to tell our listeners that the book, which is published by Peter Lang, has two versions. Actually, one of them is the ebook version, and the other one is the print version. And the print version has an appendix where you can actually find the English translation of the five essays.
Right? Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. Because of these copyright issues, I couldn't include my translations of Endo's essays into the ebook, but a paper version has, and with the explanation of the process of translation itself. So definitely, when somebody is interested in reading entire text, because of course I chose my selection was the reason why I selected these five essays was because of the topic which interested me. It was the topic of the evil. Whereas, of course, there are other motives or themes that appear in these essays as well. So if somebody is interested in reading, and as also the structure, to what extent they could be treated as a nonfiction, that's something we could also discuss, because even the Japanese researchers have a problem with making them specifically as hyōron or essay. There are lots of autobiographical elements, fictional elements that Endo puts. So this is definitely something very challenging for the researchers and translator as well. There are parts of translations Endo does from French and incorporates into his essays.
Okay. Since we mentioned the appendix to the book, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the structure of the whole book.
So a book is divided. We are talking about this paper book. So it has a preface where I explain why evil before I go into deeper methodology behind and this theoretical framework. So we have a preface where I explain why evil and what sort of challenges it can rise for thought, for contemporary thought, how it was also, it had been illustrated, or what sort of attempts the writers, especially in Western literature, try to illustrate and depict the problem of evil. So this is a very, very general introduction to the topic. And then we also have an introduction where I explain the reason behind, the rationale behind the entire project. So just let me explain that the whole project, starting from my PhD and this book, was an attempt. There are two main objectives. So one was to treat Endo Shusaku as a case study for the applicability of Porrico's hermeneutical approach, Porrico's hermeneutics, because that's the main methodology I apply. I chose selected categories from Porrico's hermeneutics, like, for example, symbol, cogito, otherness, distance, distanciation, also appropriation, which are linked, which is linked with the notion of distanciation. So one thing is to what extent we can apply this this methodology to the text of Japanese literature. But probably the main important objective was to recreate or to follow the path traveled by the writer himself in a way how to understand evil. And evil is always spoken metaphorically, symbolically. There's no direct language of evil. This is also what Paul Ricoeur says. That's why what I did, the choice I made with these essays, I think they help us to understand how Endo, as a writer, but also as a reader, attempts to follow, to understand. So what is evil? And that's why this is this very important subtitle between reading and writing, because we start with the essays where Endo is not a writer yet. The first essay I translated was Catholic Kusaka no Mondai in Japanese, Dilemmas of Catholic Writers. Of course, we never know if it's a plural or singular, but from the content of the essay, we know that it's a plural. So Endo is still a student of French literature, and he discovers evil as something seminal, as something that dominates Western literature, writers he reads, not only Christian writers like François Mauriac, Georges Bernanos, Julien Green, but also writers like Jean-Paul Sartre. He mentions also T.S. Eliot. And he tries to understand, he asks a question, so what exactly is evil? How literature can depict evil. So that was the very first essay. But going back to more details about the book, then I have a chapter one where I explain Paul Ricoeur's Hermeneutics of Evil. This is very important because the book is, as I said, I don't have a background in philosophy. First of all, my background is in Japanese studies. This is a work, this is a PhD in Japanese literature. But I found it very important to explain why Paul Ricoeur's hermeneutics, not other hermeneutics we have, or not other theories that would explain the way we conceptualize, for example, evil in critical thought, in 20th century thought. So this gives us, I try to be very clear and make it very transparent, especially for readers who are not familiar with Paul Ricoeur. So this methodology, its applicability to Endo's text. And then we have chapter two where I talk about Endo Shusaku's and his encounter with the West, because this is a very important part where I explain, so this moment when Endo discovers the problem of evil within texts, texts he's reading, and how they are translated into and transformed into his own writing, and whether he succeeds in proper understanding and translating the notion of evil, which is not only Aku, it is also the notion of Satan, for example, Akuma, which as I also show in my analysis of the essay, it's something that Endo struggles with to understand whether to explain to his readers, Japanese readers, whether Akuma is the same as Le Diable, Devil, etc. Then we have chapter three, From Critic to Novelist, Towards the Problem of Evil. And this part depicts and explores very first phase of Endo's interest in the problem of evil. So these are very early texts from late 1940s until mid 1950s. So it's like coming into being of Endo's literature. This is between him graduating KU University, so French literature. When he goes in 1950, he travels to France. He's one of the first Japanese students who was given this opportunity to go to study abroad, and he was based first in Lyon, then in Paris, and in 1955. So I use this sort of periodization based on the essays I selected. Of course, there could be another way of making these divisions. And in this section finishes with the essay, and a very interesting essay, Following the Shadow of Thérèse, which is sort of a travelogue or the diary Endo kept when he went to southwest corner of France called Land, following the shadow of his beloved probably novel, the character from his beloved novel Thérèse Descouvrier by François Mauriac. And then we have, and in this section I also have chapter about Marquise de Sade, who was another figure that inspired Ando, not only Western writers, mainly François Mauriac, to whom Ando returns also in his one of his later essays I analyze and discuss, but also figure of Marquise de Sade. This was very interesting to see about how Ando tries to discuss or explore. So what is human's tendency? So what is human capable of when doing evil? So that's why he used this figure of Marquise de Sade. And in chapter 4, we have the writer's cogito, evil as the central problem. So we have here essays written from 1960s. It starts from the essay Notes on Satan from 1968, where Ando is already an established writer. He already has his novels. He's already very conscious when it comes to his own workshop and what he's writing about. And this is very important for me, this category of cogito. I think from the start, not only from this chapter, but from the start, and it's determined by the methodology. So what happens with the writer's subjectivity? How does it affect on various levels? Because the uniqueness of Porricus hermeneutics when dealing with the problem is, of evil is definitely to this attempt to situate the question of evil in a real life foundation of our understanding. So Porrica uses this term cogito. Of course, it's not like in Descartes' cogito, he's very conscious, it's very aware of his, it's not like cogito ergo sum. No, it's already a wounded cogito, but it's the cogito, it's the subject that constantly is mediated through the text. It's reconstructed through the otherness of the text. And this is what happens in Ando's case as well. He's reconstructing, he's trying to make up his own self, because he calls himself very often ihojin, the other towards his own culture, Japan, but also the other towards the Western world. So he's, we would say, this broken, wounded cogito, but at the same time, he's the cogito that asks this question. So what is evil? And we could ask, so who is the one who asked this question? And it's very important also from literary studies that I'm trying to restore a position for the writer. The writer is not dead in my approach. And let me just finish with this chapter 5, which is the enigma of suffering in Deep River. This is a slightly, it's of course not about essays anymore, but I try to make a link between essays and novel. And in novel, this is the last novel considered as the major last novel and published 1993, Fukaikawa. And here we actually don't have the problem of evil anymore. It's more like the problem of suffering, which is the main theme of the novel. But what I tried to do was also to make the link between this being a reader, which was the main topic, the main issue within his essays, and him being the writer. So what happens with, to what extent these questions he asked in his essays, to what extent they are recurring themes, or they are repeated, or are they gathered in a way in his novel? And I chose, of course, I deliberately chose his very last novel. And then we have conclusions. But for those listeners or readers who would be interested in reading the paper book, of course, I included a glossary of imaginary of evil. So I selected these concepts, words, terms from original, so from Japanese texts, and selected and divided in sections, for example, where and associates evil with nature, which is a very Japanese way of approaching evil or translating evil. Then we have very important tries to conceptualize evil, linking with the silence. This is again something that might be lost in translation when you just read the text translated. So I tried to try to do in this glossary was also to select these terms he Endo uses. Why is it important to associate with the concepts of silence? Not being able to speak about evil, it appears in his essays, and then we have translations, which is the last part of the book. So that's in a very short. Sorry, I kept you quite long. Yes, with this section. Yeah.
Okay, going back to the part of the book, the preface and the introduction, where you also clarify your approach to this research. You talk about the dominant approach when it comes to studying Endo Shusaku's work, and you state that this dominant approach is to focus only on his fiction, to analyze his novels. But your point is that his non-fiction writings are just as important, and that his fiction and non-fiction actually complement each other.
Yes, definitely. That's something. When I started my project, my PhD, I think I was initially I wanted to work on novels as well, but then a very important part of my research was done in Japan, where I could also meet leading scholars, present-day scholars, on Endo Shusaku. There's also Shusaku Kurabu, which is the group of researchers. They organize various events, lecture series. And then I realized what was very important, that what has been, especially in the West, what has been neglected was this body of work, which is non-fictional texts. What is important to remember that non-fictional texts have been published in Japan in three separate volumes. So you can also imagine how big these texts are. And these still, actually, we can discuss, as I mentioned before, that we can speculate to what extent they are treated as non-fiction, purely non-fiction. But that's a discussion, of course, we could have later. So when I was in Japan doing, as a part of my PhD, doing my research here, actually, at Sofia University, I realized that what would definitely make my own research attractive and contribute to the existing scholarship would be to focus on essays and critical texts and make them also available and accessible for non-Japanese readers. That's why I started translating them. And actually, most of these ideas I had when I was analyzing with the use of Porrico's methodology came out as the result of my translation. So translation was a very, very important part in this process. Also, there's another text which actually appears in my book, which is Sakka no Nikki, Writer's Diary, which I quote in many parts. This is also a very important source for me, which was it's a diary Endo kept in 1950s when he was in France. So again, this is the text that actually was important source for me to see how he this couple of years Endo spent in France, what sort of texts he read, how he translated them, because he also made his translations. It's interesting to see France through 1950s France through Japanese student's eyes. So that was also another text that I tried to also make more visible in Endo Shusaku's scholarship.
Since the main motif of your book is evil and the hermeneutics of evil, I would like to talk a little bit more about evil.
Okay, right.
You state that your initial premise when discussing Endo Shusaku's approach to evil is that we have to accept evil as an, you call it, undeniable reality of human existence.
It is, yeah.
And you talk about what you call a state of deadlock in contemporary thought. This idea that there's too much evil going on, that it becomes an overwhelming experience and we don't really know.
We don't know how to approach, deal, yes. And this is the preface was actually, this is the main objective of preface. Of course, I wasn't able to, and this wasn't even my intention to give you to write, you know, from the beginning how critical thought or literature, philosophy, critical thought tried to deal with the problem of evil, because that wasn't the main point in my book. I just tried to gather the main points where this deadlock happened, especially for critical thought. And as I mentioned before, when I turned to Paul Ricoeur, I realized that yes, there's no direct language of evil. That's why we have to speak it symbolically, metaphorically, and the text and this textual approach which is offered by Paul Ricoeur. And also what I noticed, that what Endo does, his way of dealing with the problem of evil, it's a typically hermeneutical way of reading, of approaching the problem of evil. So he is in front of the text and he's trying to understand, okay, so what am I reading right now? And how does this understanding, how does this dilemma formulate also my being? This is the entire project was also to, as I said, place or focus on Endo Shusaku's subjectivity as a contemporary writer, and to restore, not to diminish the writer, as very sometimes we do in a present day literary analysis, but to give the leading voice to Endo, to show how he, what sort of texts he reads, what sort of questions he asks, how he also confronts, because we have to remember that Endo is not a philosopher, and even though he turns to also philosophical writing, he sometimes confuses. This is an interesting point. I had a problem when I was translating also Endo's text. I had a problem to what extent I should interfere with certain quotes he gives. He mentions Sartre, of course, Albert Camus. He mentions other philosophical movements especially from the West, but they are not done adequately to 100%. So anyway, but giving his leading voice to Endo, I think that was the main objective, even though I try to also capture, so what happened until this moment in critical thought? Is there any way we could deal with this, or is it always an aporia and enigma in the beginning and aporia in its destination, as says also Paul Ricoeur?
So you're, on the other hand, you're actually trying to contradict Barthes, and you're saying that the author is not dead.
Oh, right? It's not. Yeah, I tried to, definitely, that was main, because hermeneutic, Paul Ricoeur's hermeneutics definitely enabled me to accentuate the figure of the writer. This is not to contradict. I, of course, I take into consideration, and this is also what I write at the end of, in conclusions, one of the paragraph is about this problematic figure of the writer. It's not only in literature, we have also in social sciences, we have also generally in critical thought or in philosophy, this we don't have this subject anymore. It wasn't my intention to contradict. It was my intention to show the possibility of restoring the writer, the figure of writer in the literary analysis. Of course, the choice of the text, because these are, we assume, non-fictional texts, so So there is this writer, Endo Shusaku, who either he makes his own analysis of literary texts he's reading. So this definitely the choice of the text, the genres I was working, this made me possible. But I also, what I tried to do, and there's one section when I show that Paul Ricoeur's philosophy was in the movement in 1970s, 80s, where this return of the author was also visible in critical thought. So after the death of the author, where this not only Barthes but also Michel Foucault questions. So what does it matter who's speaking? That was what appears in his writing, or what is an author? He asks. Where it's. I think that even though it's even in Ricoeur's philosophy, there's not this stable figure of cogitor subject, but still it's the cogitor and subjectivity that aims at restoring itself. So that was my attempt to do. Yes.
The subtitle of the book is actually Between Reading and Writing,
yeah.
And this is something that you discuss in the first chapter. You talk about reading and writing,
yes,
as two phases.
Yes.
Where reading refers to the stage where Endo actually reads and interprets other literary texts,
yeah,
or philosophical texts.
Yeah.
And then writing is the phase where these reflections that emerge from,
yeah,
reading are actually transformed and transmitted through his own,
yes,
process of writing. And in your interpretation, these two phases, reading and writing, they're interwoven. They're
definitely
not.
Yes. I didn't want to make the readers think that we are dealing with two different writers or two different profiles of Endo Shusaku, that we have a reader and then we have a writer. These are actually phases that overlap. And as I said before, the choice I made when it comes to essays, I wanted to also show how certain topics, questions, they return constantly. It wasn't an easy choice, but I hope that it much better illustrates the way of thinking of Endo. Because going back to the methodology, it's also important to remember that we're talking about or remembering when we read the text that there's always somebody behind the text. That it's also to return to the question you had about Roland Barthes. It's a speaking subject we are dealing with in accordance to Paul Ricoeur's hermeneutics, but it's also a spoken subject, we could say. So that's why I guess these two phases enabled me also to show how Endo not only verifies or tries to revise the way he himself interpreted a certain motives, literary motives, philosophical movements, discussions he was talking about. He was discussing in his early essays from late 1940s throughout 1950s, but also his own writing. Because what is very important in one of these later text, Akushi no Honno, Evil, the Instinct of Death, is he goes back actually to his own analysis of François Mauriac's novel, the novel he loves the most, which is Thérèse Descuérieux, and he realizes that no, it wasn't evil that François Mauriac tries to attempt. This is the problem of distinguishing between evil and sin, so Aku and Tsumi. So this is the example of how important it is to read these texts or the entire book as a one project. So definitely this is in order not to lose the main line of thinking, and also line of thinking how Endo's thought evolves around the problem of evil.
Yes, you do mention in the preface and in the introduction,
yeah,
the fact that you're actually trying to follow,
yes,
Endo Shusaku's,
yes,
line of thinking,
yes,
and to identify how it develops. And when you talk, because you mentioned his encounter with French culture, his encounter with the West, you talk about this in detail in chapter two, where you also mention Shusaku's understanding of the notion of the of the self. You talk about the self in Endo Shusaku. And you say that when you analyze it from the perspective of Ricoeur's hermeneutics, we're dealing here with a self that's constantly being lost and gained in the process of approaching and at the same time dismissing two opposing cultural areas. And your idea is that this distance causes discomfort, but at the same time, distance is the only thing that gives him the opportunity to move towards greater, you call it self-understanding.
Yes, self-understanding, because actually for entire project and the way I applied Porrico's hermeneutics, otherness and distance, distanciation, could be treated as keywords, because this is what happens when Endo encounters the problem of evil through literature he, or literally texts he reads. He confesses even in his texts that how am I supposed to understand? First, it's also the problem of understanding for himself as a reader. He's very aware of his being a Japanese reader. But later, he also has in mind his own readers. So how am I supposed to translate? Or how am I supposed to make the problem of evil understandable for my Japanese readers? So this, I think that we shouldn't treat, and this is what happens in Endo's text, otherness, distanciation. These are actually concepts or notions that are crucial for Endo in the process of appropriation of the otherness of the texts. This, of course, results from the methodology which I explain how they work in Porrico's, how they have been explored and discussed in Porrico's, and I'm trying to show this also within Endo's text. Endo uses, he calls himself constantly Ihojin, which is, there's even essay called Ihojin no Kuno, the anguish or the suffering of the other, of an alien. This is the text that one of the few essays that have been already translated also into English. And it's interesting how he, this is a very, very confessional text where he and presents the way he why he calls himself alien, not only because of his adopted fate, which he uses this famous term, awana yofuku, ill-fitting Western garment, but also in a contact with Western world, which is first physical contact. So the difference of the skin, which is very, very significant for Endo, because one of his first two novellas, so fictional works, were Shiroi Hito and Kiiroi Hito. So white man, yellow man. So he definitely he was very conscious about this otherness of the skin. And then we have different dimensions of otherness as once as we start reading more and more his texts throughout his life.
You mentioned the essays. Some of them have already been translated for other essays. If I understand correctly, you are the first to translate them.
As far as I know, yes,
English.
I don't want to sound it very like self-indulging or, but one of the essay, this Ihojin no Kuno was translated, and it was in 1970s, as far as I remember. So this was one of the few essays that it's also available in English. Some parts were parts of the essays, other texts, non-fictional texts, were of course available in other in works written by other researchers like Professor Mark Williams, Professor Van Gessel, who were the first to translate also Endo's novels. But as I know, the focus on Endo's essay as making them the core of the analysis. This was my book was the first one. Yes,
you discussed the in chapter four.
Yeah.
You discuss several of the essays, and as you mentioned before, you try to follow them chronologically. So you start, for example, you discuss Notes on Satan,
yes.
which was published in 68, and then On Seeing Auschwitz Concentration Camp from 77, Evil, the Instinct of Death from 1985, and so on and so forth. And they all focus on evil.
Yes.
The title of the chapter is The Writer's Cogito, Evil as the Central Problem.
Yes.
But at the same time, when you do your, when you talk about the Endo's essay about Auschwitz, the concentration camp there, you also talk about hope.
Yes, this is important. And again, this comes from this, you know, what happens in contemporary critical thought, because we have to remember we're dealing with the contemporary writer. So Endo, in a way, in this essay, I guess he tries to also respond to how critical thought, contemporary thought, I don't know to what extent he was familiar with Hannah Arendt, for example, or with Emmanuel Levinas. I've never come across these names within his text. But I guess he might have been familiar, he might have been heard. And of course, this hope is mentioned here because he also tells us about the story of Maximilian Kolbe, the priest who was later made saint, who sacrificed his life for another prisoner in Auschwitz concentration camp. And definitely Endo tries to not only define what evil is, but he tries to also draw our attention to another side, which is hope, the race of hope, which he uses this term in his own essay. So I guess that this might, I don't know, when we were reading, did it make you, were you surprised that actually his attention is not on purely on what we would expect evil or evil doing in the condition of Auschwitz concentration camp, but suddenly there appears this, the way we do in spite of evil, these actions that actually show this possibility of overcoming evil in a place where, as I even say, and this is also from Endo's text, where death keeps watch. So there's, we can't escape evil, but at the same time, there is this peculiar form of hope.
When I was reading this chapter, I had this constant feeling that Endo, as you were saying, he's on the one hand talking about this omnipresence of evil, but at the same time, he stresses the fact that human beings also act in defiance of this omnipresent evil, and they happen at the same time. They're simultaneous.
Yes,
and you can basically not have one without the other.
Yeah, that's probably this is a slightly different essay if you look at, because Endo is not, we don't have us in comparison to other essays where Endo is talking about specific writers or what he's reading, what his thoughts are about certain literary movements or philosophical movements. He's physically there. So this is also very important from the perspective of how he approaches this problem. So he goes to Poland. He was in late 1970s. He went to Poland and he had this chance. And even when you read the essay, at the beginning of essay, it starts with this with his dilemma whether to go or not. He has a guide there who apparently is a survivor of Auschwitz concentration camp. So this is also interesting to see how Endo reads in a different way Auschwitz as another text. Yes, I guess this text stands out from the rest of essays I chose. This was probably one of the most difficult texts as well, to make it more coherent with other essays.
Okay. And this is actually in your discussion of this essay by Endo Shusaku. Yeah. I had the feeling that this is where you actually use a lot of references to philosophy. You mentioned Hannah Arendt.
Yes, I did. Yes. Yes, because this was because why Hannah Arendt? Well, because she's the author of Banality of Evil. And then what happens in Endo's essay, again, there's a very, very similar, or you can definitely see the reference, not necessarily the references, but the similarity to this notion of banality of evil. In Endo's essay, he's also wondering, so how was it possible that people so sophisticated, who loved music, who loved culture, were able to make such evil in concentration camp? When Hannah Arendt was writing about Eichmann, because I quote also her text about her report, she was also stunned by how calm he was. There was nothing you could say that he was evil from the appearance even. And that's why I mentioned here, I did this sort of parallel between the way Endo is stunned by this contradictions or something that he could not understand, that he knows about guards, people who are responsible for evil in Auschwitz. He knows that what happened there, but at the same time, these were very people who had families, who had normal life. So how is it possible? This is something that remains on a question, on a level of question. Of course, he doesn't provide us with any answer, but he draws this picture of something that is unconceivable, even after so many years. So that's why. And then, as you mentioned, there's also Levinas, the notion of this face of the other that was very important, which is mentioned also by Paul Ricoeur in his analysis in Time and Narrative. Levinas appears as a very important point of reference for Paul Ricoeur, hence my reference to this in this chapter.
When you draw your conclusions about the problem of evil in Endo Shusaku's works, you state that it's in many cases linked to the cultural context of the Christian faith, to Western culture, specifically to the idea of otherness. You mentioned the fact that he keeps referring to himself as an other. And you also identify three forms or figures of otherness. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more.
Let me figures of otherness. Yes. So I think I treated otherness in the whole project, because I apply this hermeneutic approach to Endo Shusaku. I think that the otherness gives rise to thought, and it's something that was constantly appears and returns within his texts, and not only because of the methodology I applied, but also it's a notion that Endo himself touches upon in from the very beginning of his writing. So this first form of otherness was definitely the presence of theme of evil when he recognized within the Western literature, and it was also very important for him link with, as I mentioned, physicality, the different way he looks as a Japanese person. And he was very, very aware of that. So not only the otherness of the text, but also the otherness that was especially experienced, and there are quite interesting comments, testimonies by Endo, how he felt as a Japanese. And also we have to remember, this is something that I haven't explored, but he does make reference to himself as a Japanese, also in post-war conditions. So he did have this experience of being not only Japanese in France, but also this burden, this war burden was very important. So this first form of experience of otherness, it's a very, you know, it's the experience, the encounter with the world of Western world. And then, as I write, we have another otherness, is the otherness that I quote here. Is the, as I call, and if I may read from the book, that will be much, much better for these, for the moment. Otherness as the narration of the other, who functions as the interlocutor at the level of discourse and as an antagonist and as a protagonist at the level of interaction. So this is more what happens within Endo's text already. So when he initiates his writing, he confronts different ways of otherness. So here's his otherness, but there's constantly the otherness of the Western text he indicates, he includes in his own writing. And there's finally, there's this third figure of otherness. And this is the most, as I even write here, the most difficult to capture, the most difficult to define, the otherness of conscience. And as I write in my book, the sources of this figure of otherness derive from the intervening of various factors. So we have the figure of otherness, maybe the source of injection. It may be an appeal coming from the other, or it may be related to the figure of the living God. We have to also remember that I do not give any specific conclusion when it comes to the whole project and to what extent we have, we definitely can recognize these first two forms of otherness in Endo's writing. Whereas when it comes to the third one, I guess as much as Endo, we have to leave this on a level of question. Endo doesn't define evil. He doesn't say what evil is. No, he only knows that this is enigma from the beginning, but all it leaves him on the level of aporia at the end. That's why there are no conclusions also within his essays.
This is actually one of the things that I really enjoyed about your book. There's no definite conclusion.
No.
And you actually end the book with the quote.
Yes, from this. Yes, from
it's
from
an open.
It is open topic because, as I say, this is this quote. Endo says it's. I'm yes haunted by uneasiness and anxiety. Yeah, so he's constantly. He knows that this will not. And this question will be something that will he'll have to come back. It's 1967 when he writes this word, these words, and in 1980s he returns also in the essay which I translated, "Evil: the Essence of Evil." He knows that when he reads certain novel, especially the novel by François Mauriac, he knows that he has never finished reading this book. This is the book that mediates. This is the book that he uses as a source for his understanding, one of the most important sources for him. And he says that I may never be able to finish this book. So yes, I had to. I think that was my main objective, to also in accordance with Paul Ricoeur, that one interpretation it triggers, it opens new interpretation. And Endo's doing exactly the same, because I treat him as a typical hermeneutical interpreter within his essays.
Okay. Thank you so much. we're actually only have a couple of minutes left. And I wanted to ask you about what's next? for you?
Okay,
your future
so
projects?
It's not actually, because we
were just talking about how this book doesn't really end. There's
it
an
doesn't
open
end.
Ending there. So
no,
is there?
There is a continuation, but let me tell you a couple of words about what I'm doing right now, because we are at Sofia University, and the reason why I'm here is because I'm currently a recipient of the Japan Foundation Fellowship, and I'm working on my new project, The Eye in the Making, Eye as Watashi, Rethinking Japanese Shishosetsu in a Global Age. So this is my new project, and hopefully it will turn into a book. I have a certain deadlines to meet, so hopefully it will also motivate me. So what I'm working at the moment, this is also something that came up when I was working on Endo Shusaku on the topic of evil. The continuation is, of course, the problem of subject and subjectivity, but I'm focusing on Japanese novel, eye novel, shishosetsu, as a case study. So what I'm doing is I would like to, my new project centers around the problem of subject and subjectivity in contemporary Japanese fiction. But I selected post-war writers from Dazai Osamu, Oe Kenzaburo, Endo Shusaku, Murakami Haruki, and also the group of so-called translingual writers, so like Mizumura Minae, Tawada Yoko, in order to explore the way the problem of I is depicted or is explored in their texts. And it doesn't mean that I treat all these writers as I novel or shishosetsu writers. No, this is the project that aims at also to redefine the genre, which is very difficult to define even for the Japanese. But also what I would like to do is very important is this global age. So what studies in world literature, global literature, how they can help us redefine the notion of self-subjectivity and I within Japanese literature. And I'm, of course, trying to make certain comparisons between the writers. So Endo, it's the many aspects which I couldn't explore within my book, but I'm trying to look at, as I said, Dazai Osamu, so the eye in disguise. Then we have, for example, Murakami Haruki, who has this globalized notion of eye. We have Endo Shusaku, eye in confrontation with the otherness of the West. This is like this joint project when it comes to the selection of the writers. I'm also hoping that this will be interesting, maybe for teaching materials for students interested in not only Japanese shishosetsu, but life writing narratives, which is something that constantly, or especially currently, we are dealing with in the literary studies. So what is this? So many people are writing autobiography, and this, I think that this could contribute to this notion of I within literature. So that's in a very, very short explanation. So what I'm doing right now, it's exactly this.
So you are still, in a sense, working on
I expanded my perspective into especially the notion. I'm also trying to apply not only Porrico's notion of subject subjectivity with the application of his narrative theory, which wasn't possible or not to such an extent when I was working on this particular project. But I'm also using like Philippe Lejeune's definition of autobiography. Then we have Paul John Ekin's notion of autobiography within the fiction, on how fiction can be merged with autobiography. But it's also important to engage Japanese voices. So what happens right now, currently within the so-called shishosetsu studies in Japan, and to what extent they are not only limited to the Japanese writers, but also treated as, for example, more cross-cultural phenomena. So definitely that's something I'm want to do. So it's very important, this global age. So how does this understanding of the self in Japanese literature change when we apply this global studies, which are very popular right now?
Okay, thank you so much, Justyna. Good luck with the
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
I hope you meet all the deadlines.
I'm hoping, yes, I'm very, well, I've already, I'm here since, I've been here since the first October, and I feel that I've moved lots. So,
I'm actually looking forward to your next book, and hopefully we can also talk about your next book when, when it comes out.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. That motivates me even more right now to finish everything on time. Thank you so much for having me and for this opportunity to share with you and with the listeners about my project. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Everybody, this was our interview with Justyna Veronika Kasha, who is the author of Hermeneutics of Evil in the Works of Endo Shusaku, Between Reading and Writing, which was published in 2016 by Peter Lang. Thank you so much, Justyna, and good luck.
Thank you so much.